I would get arrested for a DUI. I would get two more felonies. I passed out behind the wheel in the middle of an intersection. I woke up in the hospital. I didn't know what happened until I woke up. I'm lucky I survived. And I got put on probation for that DUI. So finally, I'm seeing some legal trouble, right? Finally, things are happening. And, you know, at this point, Dad is beyond fed up. And I went to my first, to meet my probation officer. I gave him a dirty urine. They violated me, and my dad kicked me out of the house, which I always say was the absolute best thing he could have done, and he should have done it sooner. And so I found myself homeless, like legitimately homeless, nothing but the clothes on my back.
Where'd you go?
I was at this place where I think I wanted to get clean and sober, but I had no idea how to do it. And I also wanted to kill myself, but I was too much of a coward to pull the trigger. And so I spent about a month homeless. And I remember I would like go to churches and they would give me food and clothes. And I only did that because I thought I could manipulate them. I'd fly a sign, begging for money, whatever. The only responsibility I had was to hopefully get enough money to get my drug of choice. Right. And that was it. That was it.
So that was about a month. Sorry. You said that you were homeless. Did you get immediately legal trouble at that point?
So I had violated my misdemeanor probation, so I had a warrant out for my arrest, and all of the felony indictments had come back. So I had multiple warrants out for my arrest when I was homeless. I do want to mention this. I forgot to tell you this. My first night homeless, I went to that church. They gave me a sleeping bag. They gave me some clothes. I went and found this area in the woods, and I laid my sleeping bag down, and I went to bed. And I woke up at, 3-4 in the morning, and it was pouring down rain, and I didn't have a tent. I didn't have anything to cover me. And I remember just pulling that sleeping bag up over my head and wondering how in the hell I got there. The math did not add up. I could not believe, with all of the opportunity, the privilege, everything I had in my life, I'd squandered all of it. And I had nothing. And I'm laying there homeless. I'm trying to figure out how it happened.
Now, what you might have just described for some people would be a bottom.
In a sense, it definitely was an important moment. However, it wasn't my absolute bottom yet. Close, but not yet. I eventually would get picked up on those felony warrants. The marshals would come get me. They found me. I was walking down the street when they picked me up. I sat for 5 months in the county jail, and I went to court. And I stood in front of the judge. She said, "Mr. Essig, these are your first felony charges. So we want to give you probation for these cases. However, if you violate probation, I will send you to prison for the maximum amount of time possible." And I remember sitting there and I was like, I'm screwed. I'm going to violate. Everything in the past, my history shows that I'm going to get out, I'm going to violate, and I'm going to prison. So they took me back to the holding cell. I grabbed my public defender and I was like, "Hey man, can you get me some help?" It was the first time I ever asked for help. And I only did it because I was backed into a corner. It's like a foxhole prayer. "Please, God, get me out of this. I'll never do it again." Right. And he went out, he talked to the prosecutor, he talked to the judge, he came back, and he's like, "Well, there's this drug court program you can do." And he gave me this book, and it had all of the requirements of this program in it. And I said, "Okay." I said, "Let's do it," because I know I'm going to violate and go to prison. So I took this drug court program.
It's pretty smart of you to know what was next for you at that point in time when your head was pretty much as far up your ass as it could be.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'll give myself some credit for making that decision. And I it's funny, man. I always think, like, what would have happened if I had gone to prison? What would my life look like today? I have no idea. What that might have completely changed the course of my life. Fortunately, I had another option. And I'm grateful that the justice system has evolved in that way, that it's not just lock them up and throw away the key. That's really cool. So I take this drug court program. I told you I was in the county for 5 months. So I'm clean. You know, I haven't used in 5 months. I got out on a Wednesday. They released me on house arrest. That was part of the requirements of the drug court program. And Friday rolled around and I played something called the drug test game. And how the drug test game goes is, okay, I kind of become a mathematician. Okay, it's 8 a.m. now. So if I use at 8 a.m. and I only use once, right? I drink a shitload of water and maybe some like cranberry juice, or maybe go to get one of those detox things from the store. Then by Monday, when I go for my drug test, I'll be clean. Easy, right? I'll use one time. Simple. And I called my dealer. He came, dropped off some stuff. I was alone in this house. I went up to the second story bathroom, and I used heroin. And I got outside to the front lawn, and I collapsed. I fell flat on my face and turned blue. I had overdosed. The neighbors found me in the lawn. I don't remember walking out of that house, Corey. If I don't get out of that house, I die in that house. Without question. And when I woke up, my first thought was, I'm going back to jail because I'm headed to the hospital and I'm on house arrest. I didn't think about, I almost died. What about my family? No, it's all about Lewis. It's always about Lewis. What does Lewis want? You know, and that's how I lived for so many years, man. And it was awful.
So you go to the hospital. And so what consequences happened as a result of that?
So, yeah, I go to the hospital. They hit me with some Narcan, monitor me. Obviously, I'm off my monitor. So when Monday rolls around, I decided to be honest. Okay, so we're taking steps. We're taking baby steps. So I went in and I told my house arrest officer, hey, this is what happened. Here's my hospital paperwork. I overdosed. They locked me back up. They locked me up for 3 weeks. They released me again. And they gave me another chance. And that's why I took that drug court program, because they give you multiple chances and they're there to help you. And so the second time I said, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do it begrudgingly. Right. So you tell me to go to 3 recovery meetings a week, see my PO every Tuesday, see the judge every Thursday, drug tested 3 to 5 times a week. I'll do it all, but I'm going to be pissed the entire time. And that's what I did. I'd go to recovery meetings. I'd sit in the corner. I'd look as angry as humanly possible because I didn't want you to come up to me and talk to me. But guess what? You did anyway. You'd come up to me and you'd say, my name's Bill. Great, Bill. I'm Lewis. Don't really want to be here. I did that for 6 months and I stayed sober for 6 months doing that. And the way I describe it is like, it was physical sobriety. Right. So my life did get better. I didn't do any work on myself at all. And I relapsed. And that was July 3rd, 2016 was my last drunk. And so I remember
when you relapsed, you went out for a short period of time.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't extended. We're probably talking 3 weeks, something like that. But I went straight back to like the hard stuff after I relapsed. I unfortunately provided the courts with multiple dirty urines for cocaine, and they sent me to a minimum security prison. Now, I remember the day they arrested me in court. I went in there and I remember being super excited because I had done, I worked on some steps, right? I had like done some work. So I think I had like 3 weeks sober after the relapse, and I went to court and I was telling the judge, like, man, I'm doing all this work. Everything's great. I'm a manager at a sub shop. I've got this, Judge. I've got this time. And he didn't buy it. He said, you know, Mr. Essig, unfortunately, we're going to have to get you a higher level of care. And they sent me to this, it's like a minimum security cognitive behavioral facility where they do some classes and some, you know, AOD stuff. And I was pissed, and I freaked out in the courtroom and told him, you know, that I thought it was ridiculous, that I had it all together, blah, blah, blah. Of course, Lewis is the smartest guy. And off to jail I went for the last time. When I got to that last facility, I was done. You know, I knew I was done. And the biggest turning point for me, where things really started to click for Lewis, was when I started to take suggestions, right? When I started to realize that maybe I didn't have all the answers. And so what I mean by that is, right, if the judge says, Mr. Essig, go to 3 recovery meetings a week, it's probably because he's seen thousands of guys just like me in his courtroom, and he might in fact know what's better than me, right? If the guy in the corner with 30 years at the recovery meeting tells me to do X, Y, Z, it's probably because he's got 30 years and he knows what the hell he's doing. And I started to listen and take suggestions. And they would bring recovery meetings into the facility. I'd always talk to the speaker afterwards. I made a point to do that. I was reading literature. I was all
family. Any family involvement at this point? Are you doing this on your own?
So I'm doing it on my own. But Dad, the entire time, always picked up the phone when I was in jail. Always, you know, sent money, what he could. Always took care of me. The hard part was Mom, because I would call home, and Mom would be high, and I'd be in jail trying to get it together. That was really sad, right? I think that's the best word to use to describe it, and disappointment, maybe. It was hard to listen to that because I wanted her to turn that corner with me. And, you know, unfortunately, she didn't. But at the end of that 6 months in that facility, I got out. I did the house arrest thing again. And, I remember I got a job at a pizza shop. I was making $7.25 an hour. And I was so grateful, Corey. I was so grateful someone would hire me. I couldn't believe it. I was so grateful for that job because I had a moment in jail, and I can't remember when it was, but I remember thinking, it hit me that places like this were built for people like me. That's why they build jails and prisons, because people like me, I'll never get it together. Like, this is, I need a place to live. Like, it literally was like an epiphany. I was like, oh my God, that's why these places exist. Cause I have to live here. I'll never get my shit together. And so when I got that job, I was just like, wow, somebody gave me a shot. But I'm sorry. Unfortunately, you know, I was a convicted felon. I had 3 felony convictions. I had a bunch of misdemeanors. And so there came a point at that pizza shop where I went for a manager position, and they said, no, you can't manage it because you're a felon. And, you know, I started to learn that life was going to be a little bit more difficult for me than it was before. You know, I would go try to find apartments. I remember apartment searching. It got to the point where it got so bad, no one would rent to me. When I would go to look at a place and someone would show it to me, it was the first question I'd ask. Do you rent to felons? No? Okay. Have a great day. Thank you. Don't want to waste your time. So that was really difficult, facing all those barriers and being looked at like you're some kind of, you know, I don't know, like you're not human, like you're not worthy, you're not, I don't know. It's hard.
So I think this is a great segue into what you're doing now in terms of your own experience, the consequences of your actions and how that's impacted you and what you're trying to do for other people. Is it okay if I ask you to talk a little bit about how this has kind of given you some motivation to do different things?
Yeah, it is a big part of my life today. And some of the things that I've been able to do in recovery are incredible. So one of the first major things was I started bringing recovery meetings back into that facility, the last one that I was locked up, that minimum security prison. I did that for 2 years, from 2018 to 2020. And in 2020, I was working in restaurants, and COVID happened. So I went into work one Sunday and my job was gone. And I remember thinking, like, man, it was like a really nice restaurant, like fine dining. I'd worked my way up. I was like, this is great. I'm making good money. I'm good with this. I lost my job. And I remember thinking, like, man, what am I going to do? And then I had this idea. I was like, maybe I could go back to that prison and work there and like help guys. Like, that'd be cool. I like bringing the recovery meetings in. Surely I could just work there. And so I went to the judge who sentenced me to that facility, and who saw me through the drug court program. And I said, hey, man, would you write me a reference letter to work at that facility? And he said, yeah, absolutely. And so I applied. I applied and I brought that letter and they hired me. A convicted felon, multiple misdemeanors. And they hired me as just kind of like a standard CO. It was called like a resident advisor is what they call it. And so I oversaw a unit of 70 guys. That was my job. Eventually I got promoted to the next level, which was more of a security position where I oversaw the entire facility. And then I got promoted into leadership. I am, as of today at least, the only former inmate to be in a leadership position at that facility. I ran the unit I used to live on, and I managed some of the staff that were there when I was locked up.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, there's no words. But you know, it's so funny how it happened, because that door closed and another one opened, and it worked out.
Your arc to get where you are now. I don't know what the word to describe it is, but I mean, resilience comes to mind. To be able to, I'm picturing you in that sleeping bag in the rain, and you're in a beautiful home doing our podcast, surrounded by someone who I know you love, and life's not perfect, but it's working out pretty well. Your sister's sober. And I think, you know, when the phone was ringing in high school, and what you kind of needed from that, you actually have now, but you have it in a way where you've attracted it, as opposed to getting it, you know, having candy for a little kid. You have it because of who you are and who you've become, and you're now the attractive person who people want to be around, because of who you've become. And what you said earlier, it really is the right thing, which is that, you know, what they were telling me actually might have been the right thing. Maybe I need to listen a little bit to what they're telling me, these suggestions. And that was the turning point for you. I guess when you started saying, you know, maybe there is something here. Maybe some of the things these idiots are telling me are not so stupid.
Yeah. I mean, you're spot on. Spot on across the board. I'm sorry if I did a little bit too much of a drunkalogue. But as far as recovery goes, right, it has been so beautiful. I mean, I am so lucky. I've sat on panels with judges. I speak in the middle school and the high school. Today I went and I got to interview another judge. I mean, some of these things I'm doing, it's like, it's surreal. I'll have moments where I'll look down at my feet just to make sure, you know, okay, cool. I'm here. This is really happening. But recovery isn't, you know, life is still going to happen. Life's still going to pop up. Like, I lost my mother in recovery, right? And so what does that look like? I'll tell you exactly. I lost her one day. The very next day, I took a recovery meeting into that jail and I bawled my eyes out in front of those inmates, right? And I did what I was supposed to do. I did what I was taught, right? My spiritual and emotional bank account was full, thank God. Otherwise, it might have gone a different direction. I lost my dad in recovery, right, to cancer. And the big thing with that, the big silver lining from that, is that I got to be present the entire time. My dad got to see me get sober, right? I got to help him when he got cancer. I was able to give him caregivers. I was there by his side. When he ended up in the hospital, I was there by his side the entire time. If I had been out there drinking and using, that would have come first. My father dying in the hospital would have been second to alcohol and drugs without question. I am so fortunate that I was able to be there and present for him.
What a gift.
In that time.
What a gift for him. And now he passed away about a year ago, you said, right?
Yep.
And your sister got sober about a year ago.
Yeah.
Coincidence or which came first?
She got sober a little bit before he passed.
Good.
Thank God. Because it was hard.
Now you have one sibling, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And how's your relationship with her?
I'll be honest with you, it could be better. When Dad passed, there was not a tiff about money, but a tiff about cleaning out his condo, things like that. It could be better, and I think that probably it's so funny you're pulling this out of me right now. I probably should be the one to reach out to her and do something about it.
You want me to hold on?
No, thank you.
So I want you to talk a little bit about your podcast.
Sure.
And how you're using your podcast to give other people what you were given, and you know, you've really taken the bull by the horns, and to me, I think you're overdoing it a little bit, but that's okay. But let's hear about your podcast, because anybody who's watching Crosstalk has to watch your podcast as well. And I want them to do that. So tell us about it.
Yeah. It came to me shortly after my dad passed, and it's something I had wanted to do for such a long time. You know, I never really knew what I wanted to do growing up. And, you know, obviously I've done restaurants, corrections. I work for my local news station now in sales and marketing. So I've just bounced all over the place. But I remember shortly after he passed, something about death or something about him dying and life being short. I was just like, let's just do it. Why am I not doing it? Why am I sitting here thinking about it for years and doing nothing about it? And so we started the podcast. It's called Get a Grip Podcast. The reason behind the title is pretty much like, we're very blunt and honest, right? So it's like, get a grip, wake up, right? Like, let's talk about these things, okay? Let's not hide them behind closed doors. And the best part, the most rewarding part about it is I bring guys in from that facility that I worked at that were incarcerated there when I worked there. And I always told them, I said, guys, when you get out, if you do the right thing, you will see me. And, you know, I'm not just talking about the podcast. I'm talking about recovery meetings. Like, you do what you're supposed to do, you'll see me out there. And, you know, I'd run into guys and I was like, man, I should just give them a voice. And so we started bringing some of those guys on the podcast. And, you know, next thing you know, I've been out to LA to do a podcast, up to Connecticut to do a podcast, Miami. We're here now, you know, 9 months in. And it's so rewarding. I mean, it's like, it's everything I ever wanted to do. And I really hope that that it ends up turning into to a career for me, because to get to do what I want to do and help people, what's better than that?
So a question I like to ask all of our guests.
Please.
Go back to eighth grade. Lewis at 33, right? Mm-hmm. You have the opportunity to speak to eighth grade Lewis, knowing what you know now. What advice would you give little Lewis?
It's such a loaded question because I get asked this a lot, and it's so hard to answer because of the way the disease is, right? So I think about, well, eighth grade Lewis, I would just tell him the truth. That's always my answer, man. It's not some big inspirational speech. It's not some big message. It's literally just the truth, the reality of what can happen. You know, it might not happen to you, but it could. And is it worth the risk to pick up a drink or a drug, knowing what can happen? So I think that's truthfully my answer, because I'm just so big on talking about it and being honest and open about it. So I think I would just tell eighth grade Lewis the truth.
I appreciate the answer. And truth is, as they say, a complete defense in the law. It's the one thing that if you tell the truth, you can't get into any trouble.
Yep, exactly.
I want you to tell people before we wrap how they can find Get a Grip. You have a website, or you have a maybe what we could do.
Our handle across all of social media is at official Get a Grip Podcast. TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Instagram, Facebook, at official Get a Grip Podcast across the board.
What I'll ask Sergio to do is put this on the episode so people can see it when we drop the episode.
I appreciate that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, your success is our success because we're helping people.
Yep. You're exactly right. You're exactly right.
Well, thanks so much for watching, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.